Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters in for Ben Kiefer. We're listening back today to an Iowa water quality panel discussion held last week in Des Moines at the Iowa Tap Room, bringing together differing opinions on how to clean up Iowa's waterways. The panel was Bill Stowe, CEO and General Manager at Des Moines Water Works, Sean McMahon with the Iowa Agriculture Water Alliance, Kristen Ashenbrenner with the Iowa Nature Conservancy, and Matt Helmers, Professor of Agriculture and Biosystems Engineering at Iowa State University. I started by asking the panel this: what is the biggest water quality issue facing the state of Iowa? Matt Helmers starts us off.
Well, I think we certainly have a big issue with the nutrients in our waters, from nitrogen and nitrate for drinking water, phosphorus for some of our local water bodies. And then a lot of the work I do is regionally based, and so Iowa and the water that flows by Des Moines goes into the Mississippi River and the Gulf of Mexico, and so there's a big issue regionally with the Gulf of Mexico hypoxia and the size of that zone, and that's a very large issue that extends well beyond the borders of Iowa and well beyond the contributions that Iowa makes to that.
All right, you have 2 seconds to spare. Kristen, we'll go to you now. What do you see as the biggest water quality issue facing the state?
I see a growing urban and rural divide in Iowa, and I think, though, this isn't a rural problem or an urban problem, it's an Iowa problem. And we have an opportunity to come together on a collaborative solution. That being said, the nutrient reduction strategy has some estimates of what this is going to cost, and it's a $4 billion problem. And there's no one entity that can shoulder the cost of that. And so we really need to look at options for long-term, consistent, reliable funding in order to be able to address that problem.
All right, you had 10 seconds to spare. I don't know why I'm telling you how much more time they have, but I am.
There are 12 seconds.
No, you cannot, Bill. Bill Stowe, the biggest water quality issue facing the state of Iowa.
The biggest water quality issue facing Iowa, in my view, is the denial of many in leadership positions that there is a water quality problem in this state. Matt talked about nutrient problems. We have many other problems with our surface water in Iowa. That's our lakes, rivers, and streams. Other than nutrients, we have bacterial problems. We have suspended solid problems. All of these, in my view, are attributable to agrotoxins coming from industrial agriculture. That's the issue we need to address.
All right, and Sean McMahon, what do you see as the biggest water quality issue facing the state of Iowa?
Well, I agree that nutrients are the biggest challenge, and I think the biggest limiting factor right now to making additional progress is resources. You know, we need additional resources for more technical assistance, you know, more people, more boots on the ground to reach farmers. You know, we need more financial assistance for practices, need more funding for watershed planning. But I absolutely agree with Kristen that we also need more collaboration. But there's been phenomenal momentum in the last 4.5 years since the nutrient reduction strategy was created. But demand from farmers is not the limiting factor. It really is resources.
All right, that was the closest to 40 seconds we had. So I'm going to go to Matt now, because a lot of times when we talk about water quality issues in the state, we talk about the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy, and you've heard that thrown around a couple times in some of these opening statements here. Would you give us just a definition of what the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy is, because you had a hand in it?
Yeah, certainly the science assessment, the non-point source science assessment, I was heavily involved with that. And so the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy really is a response to the Gulf of Mexico Hypoxia Task Force, that in 2008, one of their action items was that all the states, the 12 states along the main stem of the Mississippi in Indiana and Ohio, develop comprehensive nitrogen and phosphorus reduction strategies toward looking at reducing nitrogen and phosphorus going down the Mississippi River to try to reduce the size of the hypoxic zone. So that was the impetus behind the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy. As we started to look at the science, we wanted to look at the relative performance of practices, and the part I was involved with was looking at the agricultural practices and what they may be able to do to reduce nitrogen and phosphorus loading. And then we tried to look at the scale of change or scale of practice implementation that we might need to reach a 45% load reduction goal in nitrogen and phosphorus.
And what is it, what are farmers, what were they doing before the nutrient reduction strategy? I mean, how much was this just baked into the culture of farming in the state, Sean?
Yeah, so in the last few decades, you know, farmers in Iowa have been making tremendous progress at reducing soil erosion. You know, in 1980, we saw an average about 7.5 tons of soil per acre, you know, leaving Iowa's farms, and that's been reduced to about 5 tons per acre. You know, has that been reduced enough? No. You know, there's still room for improvement, but Iowa farmers and farmers across the Corn Belt definitely heeded the call to adopt practices like no-till, to do things like terraces and buffer strips to reduce soil erosion. But now nitrate, you know, that's the new challenge. That's been more recent. Unfortunately, it's much more difficult. You know, nitrogen and nitrate is soluble, so it moves with the water. But right here in Iowa, we've pioneered new practices that are very effective at reducing nitrate concentrations, where we have subsurface drainage or tiling, things like bioreactors, saturated buffers, nutrient treatment crep wetlands. So we need more of those practices, and we're only just now starting to scratch the surface. We have to really scale up adoption, but the good news is we have the solutions, you know, practices that are scientifically demonstrated to reduce nitrate concentrations. So we need to kind of catch that up to the great work that's been done on soil erosion and reducing phosphorus.
And Bill, when you take a look at this, I know that you were trying to get, or the board at the Des Moines Water Works was trying to get, working through the courts to reduce and have more regulation for these kinds of practices to go into place. As you look at where the conversation is going these days, I mean, what is the water utility having to do to just, you know, knowing that these practices are going on, is it enough?
No, is the easy answer to your question, Clay. Obviously, we have a significant disagreement up here about the success, the growing momentum of the nutrient reduction strategy. The nutrient reduction strategy and Dr. Helmer's and others' participation in the science portion of it is very strong. It has great science. The policy is horrible. The strategy has been in place for 4 years, and if anyone truly believes that we have acceptable water quality in this state, not only in terms of nutrients, but in terms of bacteria, and in terms of turbidity or suspended soils or solids, we are definitely not going to agree on much tonight. The nutrient reduction strategy is an apology for the status quo. Iowa's conservation practices are very thinly used until we have producer accountability for the pollution that they are, in fact, exporting to us as water consumers, will continue to spin our wheels. What we're doing, Clay, is continuing to use the best possible science, but this issue is far bigger than our lawsuit and far bigger than the idea of nitrate. Our concern, frankly, this last year has moved to something far more difficult for us to deal with, called blue-green algae, cyanotoxins, and cyanobacteria. The point is, agrotoxins from industrial agriculture will continue to create risks for us as consumers that will only be abated when industrial agriculture is made to be responsible for the pollutants they're causing.
So, Kristen, how would you come at this as we're having a conversation about the nutrient reduction strategy? Yeah, you spend a lot of time with policy. What kind of solutions are out there for, I mean, you're hearing some rifts in the way that this is being discussed. What kind of solutions do you see out there or conversations that can take place?
We believe in a collaborative watershed approach to this issue. The only way that we're really going to solve the problem is if we have stakeholders come together and look at the problem on a meaningful scale as to how to solve it. That being said, I still go back to that consistent, reliable funding. We need $4 billion in infrastructure. So that would be things like wetlands, exposed bioreactors, and an additional $77 million a year to maintain it. So that's a pretty substantial investment that we're going to need to make
in order to solve it. Where does that money, sorry to butt in, but where does that money come from? I mean, how does that money get allocated?
So, number one, there's some great federal programs that are already helping to address that. So, one that I'm really excited about is the Regional Conservation Partnership Programs. You may have seen this week a bipartisan bill from Senator Stabenow and Senator Ernst to have some policy fixes to allow more innovation in that program. Which I'm really excited about. It's not all that often that we can point to Washington, D.C. as a place that has good collaboration, so that I get to today is pretty exciting. Here in the state of Iowa, we have a mechanism, and it's called the Natural Resources and Outdoor Recreation Trust Fund. Voters came together and decided we needed a dedicated source of funding for natural resources back in 2010 and passed it on the ballot. But that remains unfunded. We have over 100 organizations and individuals who support that, including business leaders, hunters and fishers, ag groups and conservation groups all coming together who want to fund that. So that's a good mechanism to do so.
So Matt, when we're talking about innovations, I mean, what kind of innovations are out there for these kind of collaborative efforts to go forward?
Well, I think we do have, as Sean mentioned, you know, a lot of the technology development on many of these nutrient reduction practices have happened at Iowa State University. We can look back 20 plus years with the work at Bear Creek in Story County, where they pioneered the work of buffers. You know, early funding from the Leopold Center on that, early funding on the CREP style wetlands or nitrate removal wetlands. And then on to bioreactors and saturated buffers. We have people that have done work on diversified crop rotations and looking at the environmental benefits of those practices. So I think we've laid a good foundation of what technologies we can use to reach some of the goals that we have out there. We just need a lot of them on the landscape.
And you heard Bill talk about some of the other water quality issues. I mean, we talk a lot about nutrient, nitrate issues. Are there solutions being out there for other problems or issues facing the water in the state?
Yeah, you know, I was kind of thinking about that today. We have a new limnologist at Iowa State University, and she's really trying to dig into this blue-green algae work. I saw a tweet about one of the graduate students, really trying to start working on that as well. So I think that, we have to be focused on, we have to keep our eye on the sediment and the nutrients, but be aware of some of the emerging contaminants that are of concern and work on technology developments around some of those pollutants as well.
Another thing that I want to point out is a lot of the same types of practices that are addressing water quality also address water quantity and address soil health as well as provide habitat. And so when we look at those practices with multiple benefits, that's where we're going to get a lot of bang for our buck and be able to address a number of problems with these types of solutions.
And Sean, I'm interested to turn to you for just what is the viewpoint of the average farmer about the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy. What are they saying?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because I wanted to come back to Bill's remarks about the Nutrient Reduction Strategy. You know, last year we saw $340 million spent on programs to improve water quality in Iowa. You know, since the Nutrient Reduction Strategy was created, you know, just over 4 years ago, we now have 52 projects in watersheds across the state. I just got back from Cedar Rapids, where I met with the City of Cedar Rapids, the Nature Conservancy, numerous local stakeholders, including farmers. You know, that's a real success story. We also have the Iowa Watershed Approach project, you know, that was a HUD grant from the National Disaster Resilience Competition, a $97 million grant. You know, both the RCPP project and this HUD grant have the Middle Cedar as a priority watershed, where we've made investments there, where we have engaged boots on the ground delivering technical assistance, where we have engaged farmer leaders, where we have a watershed plan, where we have engaged agribusinesses, And where we have some additional financial assistance to pay for practices, we're moving the needle. You know, in fact, in Miller Creek, a subwatershed.
Where's Miller Creek?
Miller Creek is in Blackhawk County,
okay,
upstream of Cedar Rapids. And unlike Des Moines Water Works, the city of Cedar Rapids elected to take a collaborative, cooperative approach with farmers, with agriculture. And because of the good work happening there, you know, in Miller Creek, they're now going to have 16% of all the row crop acres and cover crops just through the cost share programs that we've helped to bring additional investments. If you also consider the farmers that are paying for cover crops out of their own pockets because it's the right thing to do, you know, conservatively, we're looking at least 20% of the acres in cover crops. 7 years ago, we only had about 10,000 acres of cover crops cost shared in Iowa. Last year, the estimate was that we hit 625,000. So we're making great, great strides. Is it enough? No. It's not yet enough to meet the scale of the challenge, but we are making phenomenal progress every day towards that.
Well, and Bill, he brought up Cedar Rapids' approach of more collaboration with some of the partners out there. Was there a collaborative approach that was considered? He brought up the Des Moines Water Works, so I'll let you respond to that.
Well, collaboration is a great watchword for protecting the status quo for some folks. So we're not going to be people who collaborate with the idea that 400, 500,000 acres that are engaging in conservation practices out of 24 million acres of corn and soybeans is somehow acceptable. This is a public health issue. This isn't an issue that can be lightly set aside and say, well, we've got a great paper, a great series of practices that says at some point there can be a 45% reduction in nutrient loadings. When? Who's responsible and how's that being monitored? Monitoring conservation practices is not the same thing as monitoring water quality. The idea of collaborating with the status quo is unacceptable. This is a public health issue, and you, as consumers, drink this every day.
So, Sean, you obviously have a response there.
Sure. Well, it's not just collaboration occurring between urban and rural partners in Cedar Rapids. You know, it's other cities like Storm Lake, Dubuque, Charles City. And I'm pleased to say right here in Des Moines, you know, unlike Des Moines Water Works, two of Des Moines Water Works' sister utilities, the stormwater and wastewater utilities, they're partnering with farmers and figuring out how they can invest in farmers to implement practices. We're working with the Iowa League of Cities on a policy framework whereby those utilities will be able to get the resulting nutrient load reduction credits that they can apply to their future permit obligations, which are expected to get more stringent. So that's going to create a new revenue stream. You know, is that some silver bullet? No. But it really goes to illustrate how there is a lot of great cooperation and collaboration happening between urban and rural partners. We're part of this platform called One Water, which is a nationwide effort, you know, to see urban and rural partners come together to find the most cost-effective ways to improve water quality and reduce flood risk. So there is good progress being made in spite of the example we just heard about.
Well, and Bill, too, there has been some more collaboration among Des Moines and the surrounding suburbs. There are conversations that the mayor of Des Moines and the Des Moines Water Works Board, as well as some of the counterparts in Urbandale and Ankeny, are having on a regular basis. That's been in the news. What are those kind of collaborations looking like, conversations?
I'm pretty hesitant to use the term collaboration because, I think it's been hijacked by people who want the status quo. Sean mentioned Des Moines wastewater and Des Moines stormwater. Sean, I was responsible for those utilities for 15 years. And it's not a matter of whether they are directly comparable to a drinking water utility. They're not. We're happy to cooperate on an even keel with folks who have a sincere interest in moving forward in protecting public health and environmental resources. But we're not going to do it simply because we can win a gold star from a number of groups who have continuously articulated their view that the nutrient reduction strategy, under-resourced, under-monitored, without goals, is an acceptable policy. It is not. We are working with our suburbs, particularly in the drinking water world, because realistically, we know that issues like water quality will continue to be a concern for all of us, whether we live in Des Moines, or we live in Warren County, or we live in our suburbs. But the idea that we are comparable with Cedar Rapids or with Des Moines wastewater is simply more greenwash. A lot of discussion about collaboration as an end of, in and of itself. Let's talk about results. Let's talk about whether in the 4 years since the nutrient reduction strategy has been in force, whether in fact there have been measurable water quality improvements in the state of Iowa. There have not, and the Gulf hypoxic zone continues to grow.
I want to make sure we get back to the other panelists too, but Sean, I'll give you a chance to respond to that, and then I want to change to some science talk.
Well, thank you, Clay. So there are actually two statements Bill just made that I agree with, and that is that we need water quality monitoring and that the nutrient reduction strategy is under-resourced. But I do take issue with the statement Bill made that collaboration is somehow defense of the status quo. I mean, that is just not true. You know, my own organization, the Iowa Agriculture Water Alliance, we were founded by three of Iowa's leading ag associations, Iowa Corn, Iowa Soybean Association, and Iowa Pork. And we were founded because agriculture wanted to take ownership and accountability of the water quality issue and agriculture's contribution of that. We are not about defending the status quo. We are about implementing the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy. And we are making progress. You know, according to the DNR, we're seeing phosphorus levels decline about 2.6% every year. And in large part, that's because of the great progress farmers are making, you know, implementing grass waterways and terraces and no-till and cover crops and buffer strips. So we are making progress. Nitrate concentrations, as I mentioned earlier, that's more challenging, but that has stabilized over the last 20-year period. But in no way are, you know, ag associations, agribusinesses, you know, groups like my own complacent or defenders of the status quo. We are about partnering with farmers and environmental and conservation groups and urban partners that are willing to work with us and making progress to improve Iowa's water quality.
You are listening to River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. We're listening back to a panel discussion I moderated last week in Des Moines as we try to find common ground in the ongoing Iowa water quality debate. Panelists were Bill Stowe with the Des Moines Waterworks, Sean McMahon with the Iowa Agriculture Water Alliance, Kristen Ashenbrenner with the Iowa Nature Conservancy, and Matt Helmers, Professor of Agriculture and Biosystems Engineering at Iowa State University. Stay with us.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
We're back with more River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters in for Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, it's Politics Day. Iowa U.S. Senator Joni Ernst will be joining the program in a taped interview with Ben Kiefer. Hear that conversation tomorrow during the noon hour. This hour, we are listening back to a panel discussion I moderated last Thursday about Iowa water quality. The goal was to continue the conversation about how to address water quality issues in Iowa. The panelists are Bill Stowe, CEO and General Manager at Des Moines Waterworks, Sean McMahon with the Iowa Agriculture Water Alliance, Kristen Ashenbrenner with the Iowa Nature Conservancy, and Matt Helmers, Professor of Ag and Biosystems Engineering at Iowa State University.
So, Matt, I'm curious, when you look at this conversation and you look at the science side of what we can hear is a contentious debate over how this is being tracked. I mean, does the science back up that these reductions are happening? And can you point a finger to how these reductions are happening and who's doing it?
Yeah, there, like Sean mentioned, there's been some work that's looked at sediment and phosphorus, and we have made some progress. We've focused on those practices a lot longer. We've not focused on nitrate reduction as long. And so, you know, we've as a result, we've not made progress there. I think one of the things that is important is to look at the scale of change that's needed. And so, you know, Bill talked about we have 24 million acres of corn and beans in the state of Iowa. In one of the scenarios, it's just an example scenario, but we need to get that 45% reduction, we need cover crops on about 12 million acres. So about 60% of those corn, soybean, continuous corn land. We need wetlands to treat about 6 to 7 million acres. And we need bioreactors to treat about that 6 to 7 million acres.
And it's still very much a blip on the radar, right? About as how much of this is actually happening?
That's right. We're nowhere near 6 to 7 million acres treated by bioreactors right now or wetlands. And so one of the things I think about, maybe to look at this a little different way, is that in that scenario for the about 7 million acres treated by wetlands, not 7 million acres of wetlands, but 7 million acres treated by wetlands, we need about 7,500 wetlands similar to the Iowa CREP style. We need about 120,000 of the wood chip bioreactors. And for those that aren't familiar, it's a wood chip trench about 50 feet wide, 100 feet long. So the scale of change is very large. And Sean mentioned it before about boots on the ground. We need education and training for people to be able to design and implement those practices. I view that as this could be very much of a rural economic opportunity to put these practices in. I do work with the land improvement contractors at times. There are not enough land improvement contractors at the currently to get those things installed in a short amount of time. But if we really move forward and trying to get them implemented, there will be opportunities for young people to work on these. I'll have to say, as a working at an educational institution, I don't teach, I do extension and research, but colleagues that teach, there'd be nothing better than we train students that they spend their career designing wetlands to help improve the quality of water in the state of Iowa. And I think that's, it's gonna take people and it's going to take people to get out there with the know-how how to do it.
Okay, Kristen, I want to give you a chance to respond to that. I saw some head nodding there.
Absolutely. I think one thing that all of us up here agree on is the need to scale up in order to solve this problem. And I think that's something that the Nature Conservancy is taking very seriously and looking at. So we actually have an initiative in the Mississippi River Basin to help reduce nutrients in the entirety of the basin. It's a 31-state basin. So I'm working with my colleagues in all 31 states to look at how we do that collaboratively. One of the pieces we're looking at is targeting. So Sean mentioned the Cedar River. We know that that's one of the watersheds that we're going to need to be working in order to address the problem. So we're looking at the science that folks like you at Iowa State are coming up with to identify what those watersheds are. We're working on policy, both at the state and the federal level. So looking at how do we make the Farm Bill programs more effective, how do we look at sustainable funding at the state level, and we're looking at which states need that the most and how do we work to achieve that. The final piece of that is we're working with partners along the supply chain. So we have the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative, which we're a member of, that have a great number of companies as well as the corn growers are doing a lot of the technical assistance work for that partnership to look at both establishing pilot farms around the state that other farms can look to for examples, and then coming together on policy as well. So the Midwest Row Crop Collaborative just endorsed the RCPP bill. So that's a great example of how when folks come together, we can start to look at that on a meaningful scale.
Bill, I want to give you a chance to respond. You were hearing the science side of this. When you hear about the amount of environmental practices need to be implemented to reach the goals that are out there, what do you make of that?
A couple points to be made. First, you've heard a lot about scale up here. Let me introduce another dimension to this that I think is pretty important: scale and pace. Sean's talking about introducing 100,000 acres or whatever it may be. It's been a while since I've taken my rate of change calculus, but I think at the scale and pace of wetlands, of bioreactors and certainly of cover crops, it'll be 50 years before we reach the kind of acreages that Dr. Helmers is talking about. That should be a huge concern. This is, we can always agree and collaborate around these concepts like scale. But when it comes down to the other dimensions that are important to marry with that, like pace, think about it. And Dr. Helmers, and who does great research, Iowa State does a number of leading research issues associated with agriculture that we have great respect for. Dr. Helmers' colleagues at the Leopold Center for Sustainable Ag were effectively lined out and eliminated because of their commitment to sustainable agriculture. One of the points that I hope you're able to walk away with is those of us who are advocates for environmental protection, who hear about collaboration, all the great things that are happening, look at the experience of what's happened to the Leopold Center, hear from the DNR that they're consciously avoiding regulations that they disagree with that are about your environmental protection. It is very difficult for us to respond to the Pied Piper of collaborating and hearing about Cedar Rapids or wherever, when in fact no one that I know of in the academic circles can point to specific improvements in water quality in the last 4 years since the unfunded, unpaced nutrient reduction strategy became the policy of this state.
So, Sean, there's a pace issue. I mean, there is a concern that to get to where the science shows, the pace needs to pick up.
Yeah, well, Clay, I'd point out that the mission of the Iowa Agriculture Water Alliance is to increase the pace and scale of farmer-led efforts to improve water quality. That is, in fact, what we're doing. Now, is it enough thus far to meet the challenge? No. You know, we need more resources. You know, as we were discussing earlier, we need more resources for technical assistance, for watershed planning, water quality monitoring, financial assistance for practices. But we are, in fact, making progress. We also need to identify what are the barriers to scaling up those conservation practices so we can do so in bigger, faster, more scalable ways. Iowa Agriculture Water Alliance is co-leading an effort with Iowa Department of Ag and Land Stewardship that we call conservation infrastructure. And we're identifying those barriers and coming up with solutions to increasing the conservation practices. And we're having a conference on November 29th on that subject. And we're going to be coming out with a Conservation Infrastructure Action Plan. And what we're looking to do is figure out, as we're creating these conservation practices and scaling them up, how can we do so in a way that creates jobs for Iowans and economic development opportunities for rural communities and cities alike? And, you know, let's take cover crops, for instance. And, you know, you heard from Matt that we're going to need at least 12 million acres.
And quick definition of cover crops for folks that don't know it. We're talking plants that you put on when you normally wouldn't be growing, and it sucks up more of the nutrients, the nitrates stay in the soil and don't go through tile drains, right?
I mean, that's right, yes. Yeah. So they're terms, either drilled on post-harvest, or they're aerial applied, you know, with an airplane, or they're, you know, with a high boy or high clearance machine put on before harvest. So, you know, we need 12 to 17 million acres of cover crops in Iowa. Now, there's not enough cover crop seed produced all in all of the U.S. to meet Iowa's anticipated future demand. So we're going to need more farmers growing their own cover crop seed. We're going to need more seed cleaning businesses. We're going to need more custom applicators for cover crops. We're going to need more channel partners through ag retailers, through co-ops, through certified crop advisors, getting cover crops seed and helping farmers apply them. We're going to need more equipment, whether it's drills or airplanes or those high clearance machines. So all of this is going to create more jobs and economic opportunities for Iowa, but there are missing infrastructure elements. So that's what our conservation infrastructure effort is trying to tackle, and that's going to help us increase the pace and scale. Same goes for bioreactors, saturated buffers, and wetlands, whether it's more drainage control structures, whether it's more contractors to put in these practices and do so at advantageous times for them. We're trying to figure out what are the barriers and what are the solutions so we can implement the nutrient reduction strategy faster.
Matt, is there room for that kind of infrastructure in this state?
Absolutely. I mean, we do, you know, there's absolutely room for that infrastructure in the state. And we need to be building it, training people to do it. You know, I think I'm with Extension. We need to be educating people on what practices are needed, but also, you know, how do they design those practices? And then we think about where is the most effective place to put them. There's been some great work that's been done by the USDA Agricultural Research Service, so be remiss if we didn't acknowledge the great work of the National Laboratory for Agriculture and the Environment that we're very fortunate to have here in the state, so an ARS unit. And they've developed some new tools that are being used in this watershed planning for siting of the practices where they can maybe have the greatest benefit. And so I think that's one of those new tools that was talked about that I think can help us in watershed planning to get those practices in the right place and also focus our attention toward working with those landowners in that location to get that practice put in place.
Kristen, how do you give that kind of thing teeth? I have a feeling you're going to tell me it's going to take money.
Right? Well, absolutely. Surprise, surprise. It is going to take money. I mean, I think one of the things that we need to really look at is when we're investing in the watershed and we're looking at practices that have multiple benefits, that's where we get the most bang for our buck. So here in Iowa, we've just, in this conversation tonight, we've just scratched the surface on the economic potential of investing in our water quality. We have an $8 billion outdoor recreation economy. That's huge. So think about if we're investing in things like turning marginal lands into grasslands that provide habitat, if we're doing things like oxbow reconstruction where people can fish and there's going to be birds there as well, if we're doing practices like reducing tillage, which not only improves water quality, but it increases the soil's potential to hold water, making crops drought and flood resistant, in addition to storing some of the water before it comes down to cities. Those are the type of practices where we're going to get the most bang for our buck. And there's a lot of economic development potential, both in the folks that are going to be installing and putting those practices in the ground, but also investing in our communities and having those opportunities for outdoor recreation is going to grow our economy as well.
Okay, so I think we're going to move from the Clay moderating a panel portion of the program to the you people come up here and ask questions part of the program. So, and let's keep them short so we can get as many folks in as we can. So first of all, can you introduce yourself?
Yes, hi, I'm Gail George. And I have a question for Mr. McMahon. Given that everyone, including yourself, says we need more resources at a much larger scale, and the IWIL funding is not nearly enough, it's a fraction of the funding that we need, and we couldn't even get that passed, are you going to encourage all the farm groups in your alliance to demand this funding, not only IWIL funding, but multiple times that, so that we can reach this solution in a timely manner?
Thank you. Sean?
Yeah, so thank you for that question. You know, I think I was pretty clear earlier when I said that, you know, we don't currently have enough resources to meet the scale of the challenge. Now, having said that, the Iowa Agriculture Water Alliance is not an advocacy organization, and so we don't take positions on specific legislative vehicles. You know, we're not set up to lobby politicians. We're really set up to help farmers take action and implement practices to improve water quality. So we're going to stick to what we know, but I am encouraged that so many groups are taking positions on the resource issue, and I think Kristen was very articulate about the need for that.
But you can't even influence your member groups for them to take this action?
Well, if you look through different positions of different groups, you know, I think you might be very pleasantly surprised with the positions they're taking.
Okay, we're going to move on to the next question. Thanks, Gail. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Danielle McKay. I'm a Drake student. I have a lead up to a question. Obviously, there's been like a lot of tension in the room, and I, at least coming from where I'm coming from, it feels like a lot of it is because of idealism, and don't get me wrong, I'm a scientist and I'm an idealist, but a lot of it is coming from a lot of good intentions, but as an environmentalist, being really frustrated and worn out with waiting for outcomes. And I think that is where a lot of the tension's coming from. So my question, coming more from, I'm not a farmer, I didn't grow up in a farming family, but my question is, rather than chasing this ox of like industrial farming with kind of catching up and trying to, it sounds like, band-aid it, is there any way of actually systemically changing the system?
Who wants to tackle that? Matt, do you want to take a run?
Yeah, I'm probably not the right person.
Okay, to complete,
I do want to comment because there is some work going on in those areas. There is work going on in those areas. I think the Practical Farmers of Iowa is doing some great work on trying to develop markets for small grains. So if we think back to what the landscape of Iowa was, you know, 70, 80 years ago, we had a more diversified cropping system. We actually had about as many acres of corn as we do now, but you know, what was in small grains, pasture, hay, alfalfa, is now in soybeans. And so there is some work trying to look at, can we have a little bit more diversification of our row crop system? And so, as I said, the Practical Farmers of Iowa is a good example of trying to see if we can't bring in some small grains in certain areas. Got to build those markets too, along with that. And so they're kind of trying to do that slowly but surely and seeing if there are opportunities there. And hopefully, you know, in the future, I think there are other examples like that. Southern Iowa, I think, is a great location for cow-calf operations. And how can we, you know, have some of those areas that might be a little bit more marginal land from a row crop standpoint, how can those lands be used maybe for pasture-based systems? And I think we, you know, there is activity around that. There are discussions around that, but certainly, you know, we need to see more of the action on the ground.
Both Bill and Sean would like to weigh in too. Bill, give you a moment here.
Thanks, Daniel, for the question. First, keep your idealism. It's critical to move us forward. Part of the problem that we as Iowans have is we've lost our idealism about water quality. My generation has given up on the idea of recreational water use. I'd love to know where the $6 billion of recreational water use is. It certainly isn't in central Iowa, where very few of us are going to boat, fish, swim in our surface waters. But the idealism is actually put to practice. Many of our neighbors in Wisconsin and Minnesota have agricultural interests and still have a conservation ethic that we need here in Iowa.
So, Sean, how would you respond to Danielle's question?
Yeah, well, you know, I would say that I agree with what Dr. Helmer said, that there is innovative work going on as far as extended crop rotations. But what I'd like to point out is that we're on the verge of a major revolution in agriculture with commodities that's fueled by advances in science and technology and big data and information. You know, one of the most promising innovations coming out of the world of precision ag of late is subfield scale profitability analysis. You know, one startup company right here in Iowa, you know, has looked at farms all around the nation, and they found that between 3 and 15% of the acres in every field lose money consistently about 4 out of 5 years. Now, those are the perfect acres to put in conservation practices, whether it's prairie strips or conservation cover or perennials. But by information, we can show farmers and landowners how they can make decisions in their own economic self-interest that improve their bottom line and at the same time improve environmental performance and water quality.
Okay, so can we have a round of applause for our panel today?
And that's all the time we have for River to River today. You've been hearing a panel discussion I moderated last week in Des Moines about water quality at the Iowa Tap Room. We heard from panelists Bill Stowe, CEO and GM at the Des Moines Water Works, Sean McMahon with the Iowa Agriculture Water Alliance, Kristen Ashenbrenner with the Iowa Nature Conservancy, and Matt Helmers, Professor of Agriculture and Biosystems Engineering at Iowa State University. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon and Ben Stanton. The executive producer of talk shows is Catherine Perkins. We also had engineering help for this program from John Pimble. Thanks to Madeline King and Amy O'Shaughnessy. Comments and questions are always welcome. You can email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Clay Masters. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.